It's the Marketplace Tech Podcast for Thursday the 5th. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. The questions about why Hillary Clinton used a home email server system instead of her .gov account while she was Secretary of State have multiplied. But here's a different kind of question. How easy is it to do? Lee Hutchinson, senior reviews editor at the website Ars Technica, wrote 40,000 words about this. Hi, Lee.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
I'm doing all right. Break it down for me. I want to protect my email so much that I want it basically in my house. Where do I start?
The best advice I could give you if you want to go down this road is to stop and reassess if you really want to go down this road, because it's not easy.
Are you sure is the first question. Okay.
You need to do just a lot of stuff.
So I'm not just buying like a power strip and a hard drive?
You do need some kind of server. So, you know, you need to go buy a computer first off if you want to host it in your house, which really is not the best option either, because it's so easy for people's home computers to get co-opted by malware and turned into spam spewing.
Part of a botnet.
Bots.
Yeah.
Exactly. Because of that, most of the big companies that provide internet access have specific blocks set up to stop email from going in and out of them.
And so what we're talking about here is trying to actually bring it into your house, and most internet providers do not actually want you to be doing that in your house.
Yeah, generally it's a terms of service violation, even, and they try to make it as technically difficult as possible. So that would be like problem number one.
I'm basically already out the game at this point.
I went down this road last year. I set up my own email server. I researched over the course of a couple of months, and there's just a lot to do.
Is it a big investment money-wise?
You know, not necessarily a big investment in money. I mean, unless you're, you know, going to be pumping out infinity bajillion emails. You know, people are making mail servers out of like Raspberry Pis and, you know, little bits of hardware.
Sure.
It's really more about the time investment. If your Gmail goes down at 3 a.m., yeah, it's not your problem. If your email server goes down at 3 a.m. and you happen to be actually using this server for, you know, mission critical job type stuff, that becomes your problem to fix at, you know, 3 a.m.
Yeah. So why do it?
In this particular context, it is possible, not ascribing any motive to anybody here, I want to be very careful in saying that, that this was an attempt to skirt discoverability requirements that would be placed on actual government emails sent through a government email system.
Lee Hutchinson is senior reviews editor at Ars Technica. Lee, thank you very much.
Always good to be here.
Speaking of going it alone, HBO has perhaps decided to not go it alone when it comes to offering its online-only streaming service for popular shows like Game of Thrones. The company is reportedly in talks with Apple to be its launch partner. The service is expected to launch next month. We're taking one of our regular opportunities to go back to Back to the Future Part 2. So far on our series about tech predicted in the 1989 movie about time travel, we've talked about sleep-inducing technology, biometrics, and more. Today's topic, the weather. Back to the Future Part 2 had a forecast for a 2015 world where a piece of wearable technology told Doc what the weather would do up to the second. Or was the weather actually being controlled? Matt Novak is the author of Gizmodo's Paleo Future blog and our regular guide to technology from the movie. He says there's a battle a-brewing between the nerds about this part of the film.
Here's the funny thing about that scene in Back to the Future 2. It's really controversial in the Back to the Future nerd community. Doc Brown, he looks down at his watch.
Wait, 5 more seconds.
And he knows that the rain is going to stop 5 seconds from now.
Right on the tick. Too bad the post office isn't as efficient as the weather service.
As I said, it's kind of controversial because people aren't sure if this quote-unquote weather service is predicting the weather or if it is control of the weather. And I happen to be in the latter camp.
It's a scheduled rain shower.
I believe so, yeah.
So do we have this in the real 2015? Not quite yet, right?
Not quite yet, but you know what's interesting when you look at the history of this, the first real application of weather control happened during the Vietnam War, where we were seeding clouds in order to disrupt supply chains and troops in Vietnam.
And cloud seeding is this thing where you kind of shoot stuff into the clouds that trigger rain, like bits of salt and dry ice.
Precisely. And in the case of our cloud seeding in Vietnam, it was silver iodide. And after the secret projects in Vietnam were revealed, a couple years later in 1974, the United Nations passed a resolution saying that weather control couldn't be used anymore for military purposes. But what's fascinating is that it was so watered down, excuse the pun.
The future of weather modification is cloudy, we can say.
The UN treaty was so watered down that it is open to interpretation where people could still use weather control as a means of exerting power over another country and still be within the realm of safe in this UN treaty. It's one of those sorts of playing God moments where weather is hard to contain. It's not something that just stays in one spot. So when you start manipulating the Earth's weather, it has real ramifications for the rest of the world.
So we're not to the point yet where we can look on our smartwatches and know that it's going to stop raining in 5 seconds. We're just not quite there.
Not quite there at all.
Matt Novak is the author of Gizmodo's Paleo Future blog. He's also our regular guide to exploring tech in Back to the Future Part 2. Matt, very nice speaking with you again.
Thanks for having me, Ben.
We'll post a link to Matt's weather control reporting at facebook.com/marketplacetech. And remember, you can email us your ideas and reactions to our segment at DeLoreanHistorians@gmail.com. I'm Ben Johnson, and that's our show today. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.